The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Friday, July 18th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Brandon Eisen in for Rob Hart. Merging finances in a relationship can be a potentially tricky dance. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, back-to-school costs are climbing, prompting tighter budgets, trade-offs, and smarter shopping amid inflation and tariff concerns. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, Dilip Rodrigo, U.S. consumer and retail sector leader, KPMG Chicago. Dilip, thank you so much for joining us. How much more are families expected to spend on back-to-school shopping this year?
Thanks for having me. You know, consumers are being very resilient right now and spending smart. You know, we see this as a elongated shopping season. I feel like most consumers have started back-to-school shopping already, and we do expect a few more, you know, the next 6 weeks or so, 6 to 7 weeks. There'll be continued shopping to be done here very shortly.
And in your expert opinion, what's driving the increase in costs for clothing, shoes, and school supplies?
You know, what the consumers are telling us is that the expectation in terms of increased spend is directly related to an expectation that tariffs are going to increase prices. So 75% of the consumers are basically telling us, hey, we're planning on spending a little bit more. But that's because we're expecting higher prices when we go out to the to check out, whether that's online or brick and mortar.
And when we talk about trade-offs, how are parents adjusting their spending to manage the rising costs?
Yeah, so that's a great question. They're really looking for value. So the first thing is, can I find promotions and discounts to manage through these increased costs? If I'm not going to find those discounts, can I spend less? Can I move to a different brand in terms of, you know, my favorite brand might be something that I like today, but I might be willing to move to a generic brand. So consumers are really focused on, you know, trying to manage the day-to-day costs that way. Also, they're really focused on essentials. So as it relates to back to school right now, it's core school supplies. It's really focused on apparel and footwear, and they might be, you know, cutting down on, you know, travel and entertainment and dining out a little bit in order to manage the household budget better.
Yeah, Dilip, beyond back-to-school shopping, how are tariffs impacting consumer behavior?
You know, the data is still fairly inconsistent. We saw retail sales numbers come up, and as Nancy referred to earlier, the Michigan, you know, sentiment survey is also showing some positive indication. Overall, what consumers are telling us is that they're much more resilient, and they're ready to be able to manage through any of the headwinds that they're seeing through tariffs. That they can figure out ways to look for more discounts, look for more promotions in their spend, that they can cut down their own spending. And they're not willing to take on a whole lot more debt right now, and not, at least not yet. And they're trying to make sure that they can manage those household budgets much more tightly.
All right, Dilip, thank you so much. Dilip Rodrigo, U.S. consumer and retail sector leader, KPMG Chicago. Coming up, taking a relationship to the next level financially.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Merging finances takes trust, communication, and planning. Joining us to discuss red flags to watch for and how to have honest conversations to build a strong financial foundation, Craig Bolanos, co-founder and chief executive, VestGen Wealth Partners, Inverness and Downers Grove. The website is getretiredstayretired.com. Craig, what are the first conversations that couples should be, and I know this is a difficult one, but what are the conversations couples should be first having before merging finances?
Everyone makes it so difficult, but it doesn't need to be. I tell everybody, if you're a couple, you've been together a long time, odds are you've already gotten naked together. The truth is you got to get financially naked, and you need to have open communication and clear expectations about what the income is, what are the debts that are you're bringing into the relationship, and talk about your spending habits. And once people make themselves vulnerable, then we can pivot into creating a system, and all couples should have their own unique system, don't you think?
Yeah, all right, Craig. So we're naked, we're talking about our finances. What are some red flags that might that we might want to look out for when we're combining money?
Oh, well, the red flags are sincere. There's no quicker way to end a relationship than financial infidelity. And if we're talking about red flags, an example would be not disclosing a debt. A red flag would be having a side bank or a side investment account that you're not exposing to your best friend in life, your husband, your wife, your partner. A third example of a red flag in finance would, of course, be large amounts of inconsistent income. That might show that someone's moonlighting or doing a side hustle because they want to have income that they're not sharing with their partner, but it all gets reconciled on a tax return.
All right, so you got joint, separate, hybrid accounts, maybe some debt you're stocking up. How often should couples check in on their finances so that the information is there?
I think you have to commit at a very granular concept to have a financial date night twice per year. Now, does that mean going out to dinner? Does it mean just meeting in the kitchen? Whatever it might be, you've got to have a scheduled time to talk about finances to make sure you're aligned, because being a couple creates leverage. It's about getting on the same page and working towards the same goals. And if you can have a larger conversation at least twice a year, then that conversation is going to support the idea of everything all goes into one pot in the middle, or you create a foundation of there's your money, your partner's money, and then there's got to be some intersection where it's joint money together. As long as there's a joint account somewhere, you can prevail.
All right. And sometimes we see resentments in the way that this is set up. Is there a risk, or what's the danger of one partner managing all the money?
I always think being in a relationship creates leverage. Someone's going to have a certain subset of talent that is better than yours. So I don't think there's anything wrong with having one person pay the bills. I don't think there's anything wrong with one person being the financial steward in the couple. But that's all the reason you have to have a coalescement at least twice per year for that financial steward to set the expectations of, here's what we have, here's why we have it, here's how it benefits us, and seek that input. And if you do that, the divide and conquer mentality can work great.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. Craig Bolanos, co-founder and chief executive, VestGen Wealth Partners, Inverness and Downers Grove. The website, getretiredstayretired.com. Up next, a viral video from a concert sparks a corporate controversy.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Now, the CEO of a billion-dollar company is now in damage control after a kiss cam at a Coldplay concert exposed a possible affair with a colleague. Joining us to discuss, Marcy Cott, divorce attorney, Berger Schatz in Chicago. Marcy, talk about getting caught red-handed. How can public exposure, like a viral video, impact divorce proceedings, especially for high-profile individuals?
Well, I mean, it seems like it's very salacious right now, but at Berger Schatz, we deal with this all the time. We deal with high-profile individuals who are going through a divorce, and if anything, it's an embarrassment to the family, and it can cause emotional. It can impact the divorce only in the sense that the emotional side of it will increase or escalate. But otherwise, it's just another kind of matter that we deal with all the time.
All right. Then you would say the legal consequences are minimal with infidelity during a divorce, particularly when it's documented or goes viral?
Well, in Illinois, we are a no-fault state. So infidelity does not really impact the divorce, other than if the person who is engaging in an extramarital affair is spending marital funds on that individual, we just forensically track those funds so that the marital estate can be reimbursed and those funds can be captured. But other than that, it does not really impact.
All right. So kind of affects asset division a little bit. But how about public behavior like this? Can it influence child custody or spousal support rulings in Illinois?
It really should not. It really should have no impact on child custody matters unless there's something inappropriate going on with the two individuals engaged in this affair. If somebody has addiction issues, significant mental health issues, whatnot. So typically it should not matter in that effect. And it shouldn't really matter with spousal support. However, if the spouse who is the public profile, like Andy Byron here, if somehow he loses his job, that can impact spousal support for a period of time. So the point is you would really like to get this, you know, de-escalate the emotion, really spend the time in a, try and keep this more confidential.
All right. So what I'm hearing here is in an incident like this, you might have embarrassment. There might be emotional impacts. But ultimately, it comes down to having to pay for dinner yourself out of the joint account once everything's split up. What advice do you give clients when their reputation or personal conduct suddenly can become a legal liability?
Well, you know, I advise clients like this to work with firms who are equipped, like Berger Schatz, to deal with high-profile individuals. We deal with this all the time. We can coach people on how to improve their reputation, how not to. If you're the person like Andy Byron, if we were representing someone like him, I would say you just own it. You don't try to deny it or say, because once it's out there, the truth is out there, then it goes away. It's no longer, so much fodder in the public.
All right. Thank you, Marcy. Marcy Kott, divorce attorney, Berger Schatz in Chicago. Still ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, combining workspace and childcare into one business.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
All right. Stocks are trading down at the moment. The Dow is down 150 points. NASDAQ down 11. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home. Matt Shapiro, President, MWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, stocks have been hitting new highs, but what's behind the momentum and will it continue?
Well, we've been up days and days, Brandon. And also, you know, notice a lot of speculative stocks really hitting highs, Bitcoin up. The recovery has been absolutely incredible. So really a little bit of an exhaustion. It's Friday. You know, it's the summer. The market is vulnerable to a pullback, of course, on any kind of disappointment. And certainly we're in the midst of earnings season, so we have to take a look at that. For instance, the big one last night was Netflix, which had excellent earnings, but the stock down 5%. Just the expectations are very high. So I think the big companies are going to come through with great earnings. But again, the market is high. You know, we have a lot coming with tariffs, with a Fed meeting, GDP report. So be prepared for a little bit to maybe there'll be a buying opportunity over the next couple of weeks.
All right. Tariffs, Fed report, GDP meeting. What do you see as the biggest threat to financial markets right now?
Well, the tariff issue is serious, which is that, you know, so far we've skirted the worst of it. But in our estimate politically, when we're negotiating with the European Union or we're negotiating with Canada, there's not a political will oftentimes, actually internally, we believe, for these countries to actually make the concession. So there's a concern that these deals will not happen and there's just going to be a broad-based 25% tariff starting August 1st, and that's not going to be great for the market. Days before that, we're going to have a critical Fed meeting where we may have a split for the first time with a couple, you know, Trump-leaning Fed governors saying they want to cut, other ones don't. So there's a lot of crosswinds over the next couple of weeks. So just keep your eye out. We are certainly, you know, pruning back a couple things here and there, taking a look at fixed income. Interest rates are high. So definitely time to take a look at, you know, what you may want sometime in the next couple of weeks if we have a serious pullback.
All right. Well, how does Fed policy play into the overall market health?
Well, clearly they're a little high right now, and it's because of their concern about tariffs, which is, of course, well-founded. However, one of the issues is consumer spending has driven the economy, and that's great. Housing has, of course, been a lag. And, you know, obviously many years ago, housing was a major contributor to the economy. We're short something like 20 million housing units. So it would be great if the sort of impasse over interest rates can be resolved. They come down about to where the 2 or 3 year interest rate is, about 50 to 75 basis points, and hopefully move these mortgage rates down to spur some housing activity.
All right, Matt. So we're heading into the back end of the year, about 5 months left. Can you give us a preview of what we might expect?
Well, we've had great gains, of course, Brandon, after what was a very bad, essentially a bear market in April. So, you know, excellent gains. Earnings are excellent. Economic reports are good. So we just have to really get through the tariffs, get to some point where the Federal Reserve is cutting rates, and see, you know, how we get through always those tricky months of September and October.
All right. And then just real quickly, what advice do you have for investors who might just be nervously sitting on the sidelines right now?
Well, it's common and normal to be nervous about investments. That's a very common situation. But you don't have to necessarily be aggressive. You're getting excellent rates in the United States Treasury bonds or other more secure investments, close to 5%. That's great money. So don't rush into the market. You know, you can always make good money on income. And then, you know, take your time and buy some stocks, say dividend stocks, such as Chevron, which today I was able to complete its merger with Hess. So that's a big payer. Bank stocks are doing great. So you can always look at something that's not as aggressive.
All right, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. Matt Shapiro, president, MWS Capital in Chicago. Up next, Entrepreneur Friday, a hybrid co-working space in Chicago that offers on-site childcare.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, a new co-working space with on-site childcare recently opened in Chicago's Lakeview neighborhood, offering working parents some flexibility, support, and proximity to their kids all day. We welcome Annie Pecoraro, owner Lay Village Lakeview Uptown, located at 4021 North Broadway. It opened in May of this year in Chicago. Annie, first off, can you talk a little bit about Lay Village and what makes it unique versus other co-working spaces?
Absolutely, and thanks for having me on. So the really unique thing about Lay Village is that parents co-work alongside their kids. And when I first discovered it, I knew that that was what I wanted to do. You know, basically, parents can get their work done flexibly when they need to in the co-working side of our space while their kids are being taken care of in the childcare side. And we break for lunch every day so that parents can enjoy that quality time with their kid right in the middle of the day.
Yeah, quality time, work time. How does Lay Village help working parents balance their careers while staying close to their children?
Yeah, I think one of the ways that we do that is we offer more flexibility than really any other childcare option. And that's critical if we want parents to feel supported and able to maintain their careers once they become parents. You know, we offer plenty of part-time options as well as full-time. We let people work where they want. They can get a private office. They can work in the main space. And, you know, really, we're there to build a community so that young parents and parents of young children, you know, can get to know others that they can lean on.
All right. Well, Annie, will you talk a little bit more about the inspiration? What did specifically inspire you to launch Lay Village in the Lakeview Uptown neighborhood and why right now?
Yeah, great question. So my husband and I first discovered Lay Village when we were pregnant and expecting our daughter last year. I've always loved my career. I had no plans to leave it and become a stay-at-home mom, even though I have so much respect for those women. But when we were looking at childcare options, nothing felt right. You know, we weren't sure that we would need full-time five-day-a-week care. And I also just couldn't bear the thought of leaving my daughter, you know, after just having her. So that was really what inspired us. You know, we discovered La Village, the original location, you know, opened 6 years ago in the Irving Park neighborhood. And we've got several other locations throughout Chicagoland. You know, it just felt like, hey, maybe this is a sign that we should open up our own. And then we get the best of both worlds. I can continue in my career. And then, you know, I can also be with my daughter.
Well, in terms of time economy and financial economy, what are some of the biggest childcare challenges families are facing right now? And how does your model address those?
Yeah, I think some of the biggest challenges, you know, that have always faced parents is how do you get it all done? How do you do it all? Can you do it all? And how, you know, and in order to do that, you know, you need support. We don't know if you can have it all, but you can definitely do it all at La Village. You know, you can manage that work. You can manage that family time and learn how to really better integrate the two rather than keeping them separate.
All right. Well, we still have a couple minutes here. Why don't you expand a little bit more on how La Village builds community amongst its members and why it's so important for these families that are involved?
Yeah, I think one of the key things is that when you have a baby, especially your first, you know, everything is new. And even though seasoned parents, you know, might kind of laugh at some of those concerns that new parents have, we don't know any better. And I can speak from personal experience. You know, a lot of my friends have older children, you know, and they've been having kids for many years. For me, you know, I wanted to find my community of people who are going through the same things at the same time. So when we come into work every day here, we're able to be in this space with other parents of young kids who are going through something similar at the same time. And I feel like it makes a big difference to be able to have that chit chat. And we might all be very different, have different careers, you know, different walks of life. But what we have in common is that we've all got kids in this same life stage. And so there's a lot of camaraderie that's kind of inherent in that, but wouldn't naturally occur if you were, let's say, dropping your kid off at a traditional daycare. You know, there's really not a community that's built within that.
Yeah, and you talked a little bit about your personal experience, but I have to imagine this is kind of life-changing, not having to leave your child with a care provider, and then also being able to maintain that closeness with them, but then also being able to focus on your career, maybe save on some finances at the same time. What are some of the personal feedback coming back to you from the people involved in this? What are they telling you this has done for them?
Yeah, you know, life-changing is a good word. It's life-changing when you have a child, and then it's life-changing when you are faced with that decision of, well, what do I do? Do I leave them somewhere and trust someone else to care for them when I'm not there? Or do I, you know, make a potentially other life-changing decision to change my career? And I think at La Village, we're really trying to let people do both. And, you know, some of our members that have been with us since the beginning, you know, even just these few couple months, they've already shared, you know, how much they love being here, right? They can hear their child laughing, you know, not too far away. They can hear their child having fun. They can see them when they want, and they can still get the work done that they need to. So that combination has been pretty powerful.
Yeah, and we talk about filling a gap in entrepreneurship quite often. What advice do you have for those out there that you know, maybe they're seeing an issue, they're thinking that maybe they could get involved and maybe capitalize on that while possibly even changing people's lives? Do you have any advice to them as they get started on the process?
Yeah, I would say number one, trust your instincts. If you're feeling a tension, you're not the only one. There's got to be other people that are like you. It's just a matter of finding them and really committing to exploring that. You know, if you'd asked me a year and a half ago if this was on my radar, I would have laughed. But once I had that tension and really felt, oh gosh, do I want to leave my daughter? Do I want to stay in my career? That was the starting point. So I'd say lean in and trust your instinct. And then I think the other piece is don't assume someone else will fix it for you. So, you know, knowing that you have to kind of lean into that discomfort and that tension can be actually pretty empowering. And then you can find your own or make your own solution.
Now, Annie, this truly is a unique a unique opportunity that, that people can get involved with on a day-to-day basis with their children. And there are so many people out there that have children in the U.S. and across the world. Can you talk a little bit about what's next for Le Village? Do you see it scaling? Do you think you might be able to take this model and expand it beyond Chicago?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely the hope. And, you know, everyone that we speak to about it seems to think, you know, wow, what a great idea. I can't believe I haven't heard of this before. So, you know, as I mentioned, you know, I'm opened the second Chicago location. We have one in Milwaukee. We have one in Des Plaines, which opened in January. We have one in the western suburbs near the Brookfield Zoo opening next month. And, you know, I think ideally we'd all love to see, you know, much greater scale and to see this kind of a space, this, you know, community driven co-working with childcare space at Le Village. We want to see a Le Village in every city and let everyone experience that awesome blend of being able to get their work done while staying close to their kids.
All right, Annie, thank you so much for joining and sharing that with us today on Entrepreneur Friday. Annie Pecoraro, owner, Le Village, Lakeview Uptown, located at 4021 North Broadway. It opened in May of this year in Chicago. Still to come, the explosion of streaming poses a threat to late night TV.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
All right. Late night TV under pressure as streaming, rising costs and political backlash reshape the once reliable format. Joining us to discuss, Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO, the Viterra Group in Chicago. CBS canceling the late show. How does that fit into the broader shakeup across late night television?
Look, I think it's disingenuous to think that the sudden announcement that the show was going to go off the air does not have any political ramifications or overtones. It certainly does. But there's no question that the format and the time slot, right, of the late night talk show has been under duress for some time. Conan O'Brien could tell you some stories, for example. While it's in many respects a relic or a composition of a time when linear television was a far less competitive space. There were only a handful of networks and TV stations to choose from. That late night slot was a very big deal for a lot of people to wind down their days, as the Johnny Carson legacy, for example, is indicative of. The reality, though, is that in today's world, linear television is very much in secular decline. There are a lot of channels out there that are, if you will, zombies that run lots of reruns and stuff. Broadcast networks are perhaps outliving their usefulness. The day-parted kind of framework that the NBCs and the CBSs of the world historically were set up to do. And late night is becoming less viewed because there's so many other choices now as people watch stuff in streaming only. I do think, however, the format isn't necessarily going to go away. It's probably migrating really to streaming. I see you look at podcasts and stuff and video podcasts. Hell, even Netflix with John Mulaney earlier this year created their own late night show, but streaming centric and streaming only. So I find it curious that CBS is walking away from this space altogether. Again, other reasons possibly as part of this. But there's no question that people have many, many other alternatives now to watch interview type shows, and waiting up till 10:35 at night to watch it isn't necessarily the case anymore.
Yeah, with streaming, you don't necessarily have prime time anymore. You don't necessarily have people needing to wait around till 10:30 to end the day. If they want to be in bed by 9 o'clock, they can throw on that hour talk show at 8 o'clock and wind down that way. How does that affect with advertisers and networks rethinking the value of late night TV and in the era of that shrinking live audience?
I think in the short term, CBS is actually going to suffer because unless there's some further announcement to come, CBS will effectively have abandoned a time frame or time a slot that they so desperately gave David Letterman a ton of money to kind of build for them 30 years ago. So in essence, you have ABC and NBC still with late night shows, and they still generate a decent amount of advertising revenue, especially for theatrical releases and featuring the stars of those shows. So those movies. So I don't know. I think CBS is going to have a huge void late night. I don't know about the other ones, but for now, there's some extra ad dollars that are going to go to to NBC and ABC.
Yeah, Tim, you mentioned John Mulaney, Everybody's Live. Is this kind of like a good example or a good test of what the future might look for, offering a live segment for those who want to feel like they're catching something in the moment, but then also having it live on streaming immediately afterward where people can access it at their own leisure?
Yeah, I think so. I think the problem, though, is generating the communal, like, tune-in at the same time kind of thing is very hard to replicate in streaming, even with a Netflix with many, many millions of subscribers. It's hard to generate that kind of attention and time date stamp to tune in and watch something, especially when you're so used to turning on the set and literally just going through a menu to find something. So, but the essence of the show, the talk show kind of thing, is still a formula that will be successful, no doubt, no matter where it's offered.
All right. Thank you, Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of Atair Group in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.